Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network, a station dedicated to the concept that all manifestations of the divine are equally valid. Join Reverend Terry Power HP, Lord Onyx, and all the hosts 7 nights a week for programming covering a wide range of spiritual topics right here on Blog Talk Radio. Spiritual Wellness and Physical Health with your hosts, Robin A. McKean and Lisa Ripple. This show focuses on helping you integrate your spiritual wellness, your physical body, and your emotional health. We talk about fueling your soul and inner self, as well as the right food to fuel your body.
And now, here's Robin and Lisa.
And hello, everybody, and good evening. It is yet another Friday night, and I want to apologize to everybody for last week's just BTR debacle with the gremlins, but we have overcome, and we are here tonight again with Terry Power. We'll be interviewing him in a few minutes, but is my good buddy Lisa here?
No, I'm not here.
Well, I'm glad to hear it.
Sorry, I've left the building.
Lisa has left the building.
Left the building.
Do you need an escort, or are you good by yourself?
I need help. You know, how do I get back in?
I can arrange an escort of a couple of guys with six packs and kilts.
Ooh. I don't know, you know. I had that little post last week on my Facebook page. Mm-hmm. It was a picture of Joe. Oh, my gosh. Old age is setting in. Yep. I see his face. He's engaged to Sofia Vergara, played a werewolf on True Blood. Joe, really handsome guy. Anyway, him. If you can get him, that would mm-hmm. be good. I posted a picture of him, and I said, no one said, hey, Joe, put your clothes back on, ever. And then then Matt Master Giovanni turns around and posts in and goes, Joe, put your clothes back on. I was like, no, stop. Anyway. No, it's good. It's good. Everything's good. I get to see Poopsie tomorrow, so I'm a happy camper.
Oh, wonderful.
Going to her house, swim in the pool, play with the baby. It's all good. What's really good is that, like, I can't do anything when I'm there except watch her. So when she takes a nap, there's nothing left to do but take a nap.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's usually a good day.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I'm jealous. I have to live vicariously through you because I'll probably never live long enough to see grandchildren.
Stop it. Well,
like
you know what?
She's going to be a veterinarian. So that's like 10 years of college. So she's probably not going to have a baby before 30. And by the time she's 30, let me see, I'm going to be 83.
Well, let me put it to you this way, though. You can look at it two ways. She could, in fact, not get married right away or have babies until she's 30. Mm. And there is something to be said for that, because for her to turn around and give you a grandchild at 18 would have its own dramas.
Yeah, she probably wouldn't live to see 19.
But the baby will be fine.
I'm just saying. Yeah, the baby will be fine, but I'm just saying.
No, now let me say this about that, though. I've known several people who have, as a matter of fact, one of Sammy's friends just graduated from nursing school, and she just had her second baby and managed to take her finals, get her diploma, and then a week later had her second baby. So, and she's doing it herself with her husband. So it can be done.
Oh, yeah.
It can be done. So don't count your chickens before they hatch.
Oh, please. Let's not mention chickens. We didn't start today with the chickens.
The chicken. And you know what's really bad, too, is I was thinking about you today because I am completely out of eggs.
Oh, my God. I had an 18-count egg thing for you when I was coming down.
Oh.
And I left it in the refrigerator when I went out the door. Right out the door and left it. So.
So sad, so sad, because I have no eggs. I was like, damn. Well,
yeah,
no,
well,
it's not
you
your
fault. Here. I'll be more than happy to give you eggs.
I know. I
Most
know.
Expensive
I'm hoping.
Carton of eggs Ron ever bought.
Exactly. Well, I'm hoping to come see you in September. I'm just worried that if the doctor says I have to do my knees earlier, that could put a kibosh in any plans I make. So I'm not putting a definite on anything at this point.
Yeah, I understand. I understand.
You know,
okay.
But anyway, and you know, it's funny too that you said that we mentioned my knees because I know we're talking about fear tonight, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And I was thinking about this last week when we were getting ready to come into the show that we shall not name. And, you know, I was thinking about fear. And, you know, I don't know too much where your plan was to go with it, but I was thinking about, you know, fear-driven behaviors and how fear plays out in what we do or don't do.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that for me, I'm definitely starting to have that old person fear. That's what I call it, of falling down, of not being because of my knee situation.
I'm falling and I can't get up.
Well,
we need
it's
to get
not
you one of those little life alert things.
I don't even. It's not even about falling and can't get up. I could sit down on the floor and not get up. But the thing that registered with me when you mentioned it was that my son had my granddaughter's first birthday back in May, and it was an outside party. It was a lovely day, but. You know, his backyard is, even though you're the one on the mountain, his old backyard, because they did just move, was very rooty and uneven and a lot of stuff. It was a very rough backyard.
Yeah.
Your backyard is a plateau compared to what...
Yeah, we have
what,
that one flat spot behind the house. Everything
right.
else is
and
a hill.
But the thing is, you know, I could walk around and talk to people and then get in the house without a problem. In his backyard, just going from the picnic table to the house was very gnarly.
Well,
and he had
that South Jersey thing where there's no grass, it's just sand and roots.
It's sand and roots and stone.
Yeah.
Right. And he had a lot of his friends there, and, you know, they were drinking as I did in my 20s, too.
Mm-hmm.
And I was terrified that somebody was going to be kind of oblivious.
Mm-hmm.
And knock me down.
Yeah.
And my sister and I ended up leaving early.
Yeah.
Because I was, the more things started to gear up, the more I became afraid.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, wow, that's kind of like what, another aspect of, you know, fear-driven things. Instead of staying at the party and drinking with everybody else, I went home because I was afraid that I was going to get hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's just, it's very odd. How come when we're in our 20s and we see something like, you know, Great Adventure here in Jersey and the Scream Machine and it goes up at like, you know, a right angle and you're chugging up this thing and you're wondering why it's not falling off the tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And then you drop down, you know, 500 feet at, you know, 0 to 60. How come when you're 25, you can do that? But when you're 53, the thought of it makes you sick to your stomach.
Well, I'll tell you why. Because when we're 23, we don't realize all the things that can go wrong and kill us. When we're 53, we have figured it out. Like, holy shit, what did I do that for?
Yeah, but, you know, you're standing in line and you're watching car after car after car safely make it back into the station. And, you know, that particular ride, I have never heard of a problem on the ride. You know, I know there's been some amusement park problems that have occurred recently, just in the news today, where somebody got hit and died because of a roller coaster. Now, he wasn't on the ride.
That's why at 53, because we watch the news, we hear these things,
but he was,
and they
but,
stay
he,
in our
he,
mind. When you're 23, you hear that shit, and you think, it'll happen to somebody else.
Yeah. He wasn't on the ride.
Oh, geez.
His cell phone fell out of his pocket, and he climbed the fence under the ride to get his cell phone, and the car came by and hit him in the head. So,
sorry.
I mean,
the how stupid can you be?
Well, yes,
category.
You know, stupid human tricks, but mm-hmm. I have never done that. I mean, I would never think to do that,
mm-hmm.
but I won't even get on the ride.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, there's all kinds of fear.
Yeah, Darwin. I'm getting the evil eye over here from our engineer and our guest this evening.
Yes.
That it's time to remind people that they need to call in to talk about fear and how it has either kept you from moving forward, or stories about how you overcame fear and
mm-hmm.
how it affected you. And so that the call in number is 646-564-9714. And let's see, is Terry actually alive? And he's been listening to us all this time. Are you there, honey?
I am here.
Aha.
How's it going?
Oh, and don't forget to press 1, because it did not prompt me to press 1 this time.
Yes.
Okay. So, I was listening in, and I had, of course, I did have a comment in the chat room about the individual that climbed the fence, passed all the signs that said, warning, don't go in here, you'll get dead. And he got dead. I'm Darwin, you know, survival of the fittest. It's, stuff going on, and, sometimes people are going to do stupid stuff and they're going to not be here,
mm-hmm.
you know, because of it. And, you know, we can't control any of that. So, you know, you can put up all the signs, do all that you want, and people are still going to do stupid stuff. And as for the fear, coming into, a roller coaster ride and all of the things that we do and all the things that I did in my 20s and even into my 30s, there's this sense of immortality. We don't have as much fear. At 50-something, we're a little more conscious of the fragility of the human body. We're a little more conscious of our own mortality. So, I think that has a whole lot to do with it. But that's not really the kind of fear we're going to be talking about, because those sorts of fears, those are the sorts of fears that are just natural-based. That seems like a dangerous thing to do. I think I'll not do that kind of fear. That's the little boy and little girl inside of ourselves saying, protecting us and, keeping us from doing things like climbing fences under roller coasters to get a cell phone that, keep us around. The kind of fear we're going to be talking about tonight is the fear that drives our bad behaviors. And, we've all got bad behaviors. Working with Robin on the, the life coaching and that sort of thing, we're looking at a whole lot of not just what do we need to change, but why do we keep doing what we're doing? Why do we continue behaviors that we even consciously know this behavior is bad for me? This is a bad thing to do. Why do I keep doing it? Very often, it is deep-seated fears that we've not even looked at or recognized. It's fears that, fears that impact things like our pride. I'm very proud of who I am and what I do, and nobody's going to tell me what to do. And, you know, that kind of fear of, impacting our pride, fear impacting emotional security, jealousy kind of fears and the stupid things we do. And let's face it, the media feeds that sort of stuff. And personal relations are sex relations. You know, all of the media is constantly bombarding us with be afraid and use our product so you don't have to be afraid. Use this hair color. Use this makeup. This is going to, use this cologne for men. Use this. Use that. You know, our product is going to make you, prettier, sexier, happier, whatever. So we're constantly bombarded by all of these fears. And that's the kind of fear that we're going to be talking about tonight. There's things that we need to look at, those fears that impact how we act, how we react to our environment, and the sorts of things that can lead us to continued bad behaviors. So, Lisa, what do you think of all of that?
I don't have any of those fears. I can't relate to those fears.
Okay.
Because as you know me well enough by now to know that, A, I don't wear makeup. B, I don't care about clothes, makeup. I don't care about eating the right thing or drinking the right thing or any of those things. So I really can't relate to that on a level of fear.
Okay. Well, are there any behaviors that you continue that you know are not good for you?
Oh, now that's a completely different thing, because I don't smoke because I'm afraid to be alive. You know what I mean? I smoke because I want to. I don't care whether or not every cigarette is a nail in my coffin. But that's my personal choice at 53 years old. There's no fear involved. I'm not afraid to quit. I've quit 7 times. It's not that there's no fear involved. So if you want to talk about bad habits, I can talk about bad habits. But I really can't relate to bad habits because of fear. Like, I can't even. My only fear right now is a fear of falling. But I don't do anything bad because of that fear. I do good things because of that fear.
Like leave drunk in backyards.
I don't get drunk anymore. I don't leave the house without my cane unless I know for a fact that all I'm doing is parking in the handicapped spot, running to the store, and getting back in my car. Because then I don't have to worry about falling because I'm 2 feet from the door, 2 feet from my car. So for me, fear works in a positive aspect. If I'm afraid of something, I might turn around and do something better, if that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what it would seem. And yet I deal with people all the time who, including myself, I've had some, in the past few years, I've had some changes in my behavior that were brought about by issues in my life. And then as I started working with people that, support groups and that sort of thing, I started realizing, and we worked through all of the ways that fear was driving my behaviors. And I didn't think I was afraid.
Well,
I didn't think it was fear that was driving it.
Can you give me an example of a fear that causes you to do something wrong rather than a fear that causes you to do something right?
Sometimes a not caring at all is driven by fear of change.
Fear of failure, just being, fear of success.
Fear of failure, fear of success. All of these things can lead us to resist change, even change that we know is good for us. Changing some of the things in my life, you know, I was driven by fear of being alone. And so I had behaviors that led to socialized activities.
Okay, I can understand that. I definitely understand that there are people out there that isolate themselves because of whether it's an agoraphobia or just a fear of not being liked. I can understand that. You know me well enough to know that that's not, you know, it's not in my wheelhouse.
All right.
My only fear, and I've thought about this for 2 weeks, my only fear is a fear of hurting myself. And I mean physically falling because of my instability. That's really my only fear. I'm not afraid of change. I wouldn't be having surgery if I was afraid of change.
Okay. Well, I mean, this conversation, of course, is not necessarily about any one person. Or you specifically. But there's a lot of work that I do with people that don't realize that their behaviors are fear-based until we start looking. When we start looking at what they're mad about, and then how did that impact their self? And then once you start looking at that, then you can start looking at, fear of impacting on my self-esteem. Whether it's even admitting I have a bad behavior. Changing that behavior could impact how I feel about myself, how others see me. Pride goes along with that. Emotional security. Am I afraid that if I make this change in my life, the people, my support group are going to be there or not be there?
One of the things, as somebody who did make a pretty radical change in her life, and actually it was in some ways fear that drove me to make that change, having the gastric bypass surgery 11, 12 years ago, I was afraid I was going to die at a very young age, and I really wanted to have a child. I was 40 and 310 pounds, so I had to make a change. And as much as I was afraid of the surgery, I was afraid of the consequences of not having the surgery even more. And what happened after I had the surgery, there were people in my life that were adversely affected by the changes that I was making. And if I had known that going in, I probably would have feared losing some of those people because of it. And
here's a question I have. When you went through that, you didn't have just the surgery, but you had to make changes in your life as well.
Absolutely.
You had to start looking at the reasons that you got to that point.
Gastric bypass surgery, I always tell people this, gastric bypass surgery is not the easy way, like a lot of people think. It forces you, it's a tool, and it forces you to deal with the reasons, the emotional reasons that you eat versus I'm going to go on a diet and try to control my eating without dealing with the emotional reasons that I eat. And that's why so many people don't succeed long-term with diet, with weight loss and life change, because they don't deal with the emotional reasons why they have the patterns in their life that they do. It's just like any other addiction. And I'm certainly not perfect. Yes. I still struggle with it every day.
Right, and a lot of those behaviors are the fear-based.
Mm-hmm.
Are the fear-based emotions. Is this going to impact my pocketbook? Well, eating healthier, just using your example, if I may pick on you for a moment.
Sure.
No, using your example, changing your diet to a more positive, healthy diet to back up, you know, to go along with the physical action you took,
mm-hmm.
Costs more money.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Also, there was the standpoint of that I had people in my life that I, like my mother, that we would get together and we would eat because that was what we did together. We ate. And so I would get together with my mother, and we wouldn't know what to do because I'd be like, well, no, I can't do that. I can't, you know, go to a restaurant and have a six-course meal. It's not going to happen. You know, I can go with you, but I'm going to have this little amount of food, and really what I'd rather do is just sit and talk to you, Ma. And so, you know, things definitely changed the way I related to people in my life. And there were people who... I don't want to say they stopped being my friend, but we didn't have as much in common anymore because we didn't have that food connection. I'm still a foodie at heart. I mean, Lee knows I still love food, and I love good food, and I love to talk about food, and I love to, you know, tell people, oh, this is this great recipe. You should try this. And so I'm still a foodie at heart because it wasn't the fact that I loved food so much that was the issue. It was all those emotions. You know, I'm happy, I eat. I'm sad, I eat. I'm insecure, I eat.
Yeah. And here's the thing. The behaviors that we're talking about may not be directly fear. Like, I'm afraid I'm going to eat. I'm afraid I'm going to have a cigarette. I'm afraid I'm going to, therefore I'm going to have a drink, or I'm going to do whatever. When we have these emotions, usually somewhere it's based in fear, we have these emotions and then we use whatever behavior to emotionally compensate. There may not be a direct, I'm afraid that my spouse is cheating on me, I'm going to go have a steak.
Oh, yeah. I ate for reasons like that. Absolutely. I would get all, you know, neurotic and insecure and be like, well, he's not here and he's not doing what I think he should be doing. He must be doing something that I don't know about, and I'm going to comfort myself with food. So it was very much fear-based. Fear of, you know, am I not going to fit in? Fear of being hurt by other people. So if I ate and kept people at bay in that way, because, you know, when you're overweight, people are not as apt to come up to you and want to engage you and be your friend, unless, of course, you're somebody, you know, who's really gregarious. And I'm to a point, I am, but when I'm with people I don't know well, I tend to be more quiet and observed in the beginning. And so, you know, there are aspects of all of these things for me when I was dealing with all of that after the fact, because all of a sudden, all those things, all those comforts, all those protections, all those reasons to be able to connect with people. You know, you go to a party and you don't know anybody there, at least you can stand near the table of food, and when somebody comes over, you can say, oh, yeah, that dip is really good, and at least use that to start a conversation. And so some of those things went away.
Well, on that pause, we should probably think about taking a break. It is approaching the half hour. And tonight's lovely piece of music is by, of course, my favorite group, Music for the Goddess, and it is the Wizard Wood.
Wendy called in last night.
Oh, that's nice. How's she doing?
Good. It was good to talk to her. We were talking about, you know, some of the elders having passed last night, and I happened to mention Charlie, and so she called in, and we talked for a few minutes about Charlie. That's nice.
All right, so we'll take a break, and then we'll be back.
Okay, thanks.
We'll be right back. one power in the universe, and we are perfect manifestations of that power.
And as such, we pray. We pray for peace. We pray for love. We pray for stability. We pray for the nation in which we live. We pray for the world.
We will it. We manifest it. We draw it to us. We receive it. We accept it. And we give thanks for it. And by our will, so mote it be. You're listening to Spiritual Wellness and Physical Health on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Thanks for sticking around. And now, back to Robin and Lisa.
And we're back. Okay. Just wanted to remind everybody to feel free to call in and add to the conversation if you'd like to. That number is 646-564-9714. Also, part of the reason we're doing this topic this evening is we're going to this really cool event tomorrow, Healers Helping Healers. And it's basically a bunch of healers who are all going to come together and share their healing modalities with one another. You cannot sell anything. No money will exchange hands. It's a totally free exchange of, you know, ideas and services. And I'm just really looking forward to being there. Actually, we should be leaving here in about 3 a.m. tonight.
Yeah.
Technically tomorrow morning. But so that's where we're headed out for. And one of the things that Terry and I do is talk to people. We talk to people about fears. We talk to people about habits. I'm a health coach. And so when I look at people's health and evaluate it to help them, we look at everything in their life. And oftentimes people will need a little spiritual guidance and counseling. And, you know, that's sort of Terry's expertise. And so we'll do that together. You know, that's kind of why this topic kind of popped into our minds, thinking about...
Well, yeah, I mean, you've been doing this show for a year, and, you know, finally get your partner on as a interview, so...
I'm sorry. I apologize. I was reading something. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying, you know, we've been on the air a year now, and we've been partners in this for, you know, about, what, 6 months or 7 months. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, now with the event coming up, you finally asked me to be a,
did you,
a guest. I mean,
truth be told, I was in need of a guest and a topic. Lisa and I had exhausted our immediate thought process, rightly. He was
our immediate guest base. I was getting ready to put a Christian on the air.
We could talk about cats.
At least I'm ahead of the Christian. That's good.
We could always talk about cats.
We could talk about cats.
Joking the cat is a healing modality. There we go.
Well, you know, it's funny because I just read something on Facebook, so you know it must be true, that the purring of cats when they sit on you and they purr, it actually does something to bring down your blood pressure, to relieve stress. So cats are a good thing.
Well, yeah, I mean, any animal. You know, those same studies done with dogs. I mean, it's the whole idea of having that, you know, that physical contact with an animal.
And the unconditional love. They don't want anything.
Yeah.
They just want to sit with you.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, they may want to treat or get fed occasionally, but other than that, yeah, I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah. But it's not like they want your money. They don't want your money. They don't want your stuff. They don't want They don't want you to go out with them when you don't want to go. For the most part, they just want you to care about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good thing.
Yeah, dogs and cats have different personalities. I mean, cats, you sort of have to be in sync with them. You know, you have to kind of let them come to you. And it,
I thought you were going to say insane.
Well, no, and it's a bond formed over time where when you adopt a dog, they're like, you're my best buddy, I love you, I love you, I love you. And I have a cat. I have cats and a dog. And, you know, my dog, I love her beyond words. She's a great dog, even though today I wanted to maybe strangle her there for about 10 minutes.
You're allowed. We want to do that to our friends sometimes, too.
This is true. And our kids.
And to our children, yeah.
All right, listen, I want to go back to something that we were talking about before the break.
Okay.
You were specifically talking about the if you had known when you were embarking on your particular bypass surgery,
mm-hmm.
if you had known the fear of possibly losing friends, or, you know, you might have thought different about it. Sometimes I think that when we make radical changes in our lives, whether it's fear-related or positively related, sometimes you can go, I don't want to say too far, but you make a radical change for yourself, and then you say, well, I don't know why people don't like me anymore, or why I don't have the same friends I have anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of that can have... Well, no, not necessarily. Sometimes it's a matter of, and I say this from some knowledge. Let's just use it as an example. And Robin, you were not this bad, okay?
Mm-hmm.
People go through gastric bypass or they go through a very large weight loss. There's a thing out there called skinny girl syndrome. I had it when I dropped a lot of weight myself. Suddenly, you feel like one of the hot girls or one of the cool girls, and your complete attitude changes. Who you were before is not necessarily who you are now. It's possible that people who loved you for the, you know, person that you were then, now suddenly you take on this other persona that they don't recognize. And they feel like, well, what happened to the person I loved? Yes, yeah, she lost weight, whatever. But now she's not the person I thought she was. Or he, because it's happened.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this. Yeah, I mean, they always say there's nothing, the only thing worse than a non-smoker is an ex-smoker.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, so why, you know, when you're doing something good for yourself, that's fantastic. Do it. But why does it always have to radically change who you are?
Well, let's look at, well, and sometimes it does, but I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. Now, the skinny girl syndrome or the radical anti-ex-smokers, you know, those people aside, very often when someone does make a profound change in their life, there's a spiritual component to it. And this person suddenly reacts to things, rather, let me rephrase that. Suddenly, or even over time, begins to respond to things rather than react. The people in our world, and I went through this, the people in my world that were used to dragging me around by my fear and guilt, when I started putting down my fears and my guilt, and I started dealing with the emotional issues that I was not dealing with, you know, for so many years of my behaviors, people didn't know how to relate to me anymore. They didn't know what to do because they were used to pushing this button and getting some reaction out of me. And they would push that same button, and then they would get a measured, calm response rather than the reaction, and they didn't know how to deal with it, and some of them still don't.
Okay, I can understand that. That's when the friend is the wrong thing, per se. But not everybody
is not your friend anymore because they don't get what they want. Maybe they don't like the person that you have decided you want to be. Now, well, I'm not saying you're wrong for wanting to be that person, but they, the people that move on, have every right to say, you know what? I don't like her like this.
Well,
or
the people that have left my
like,
life, yeah, the people that have left my life, I hope they find what they're looking for.
Absolutely.
I don't begrudge them. I
and
don't
that's
begrudge
absolutely
them.
True.
There, was there hurt? Yes. You know, does it still occasionally
you not
hurt?
Are you saying that you don't have any responsibility for the loss of the friendship because you chose to make change, granted, the change. You choose to make the change. Now you turn around and become this completely other person. Isn't it partially your responsibility that you chose to become this other person? And therefore, they may not be the people
at all. So therefore, I'm not allowed to hurt? So wait a minute. So therefore, I'm not allowed to hurt?
No. It's got nothing to do with the hurt. No. What I'm saying is the person who makes the radical change have some responsibility in the loss, not just the person who leaves because they couldn't handle it or because they were left behind. Isn't there some responsibility to the person who makes the change that they made such a radical thing that people no longer wanted to be their friend? Isn't there some responsibility on the changer's part as well?
Oh, well, I mean, part of what I talk about in this healing modality is that, and it starts with what are the things we're angry about and what was our part in it. And our part in it was based in fear in what way? And what were our behaviors that caused this anger? How are we partially responsible for that, or even totally responsible for that situation? I absolutely agree that we have to accept responsibility for our part in everything.
All right, so I was going to say, if I suddenly decided to become, a serial killer, I got to take responsibility for driving my friends away because I became a serial killer.
Yeah, one would hope.
You know what I mean? Like, I would have to take some responsibility. Just because it made me feel better and I faced my fear of cops, still, it's... I'm the one that caused the rift, so to speak.
Well, so I mean, we were talking about positive changes in people's lives, but yeah, I mean...
You were talking about fear-driven things that take us... You know what I mean? So if I was afraid of somebody that walks down my street, and eventually I just became so psychotic about my fear that I killed them to alleviate my fear because now they're gone. All I'm saying is that I feel like both parties in any given changing situation should have to be responsible for part of the loss that occurs. So when you're facing the fears of making the change, understand there's going to be people who are not going to be able to understand it, and you're choosing to make your changes. You have to accept. You can't turn around and say, well, they don't like me anymore. Well,
I don't think it was ever, you know, for me, it was never about I thought other people didn't like me anymore. It was about, yes, I was making these radical changes in my life that I no longer had things in common with people. Like with my mom, I couldn't go to lunch and spend 2 hours at lunch with my mother anymore. And that irritated her because I was going to go and I was going to have a bowl of soup and that was going to be it. And I wasn't going to want to have dessert and I wasn't going to want to have appetizers and I wasn't going to want to sit there and, you know, talk to her until, hey, you know, can we have a little bit more of that? Or, you know, we'd go to the salad bar at the one place in Brick near where she lived, and it would be 2 hours, and she'd keep going back to the salad bar. And
but I'm saying, let her go. You can
the same thing.
Talk.
Yeah, but I mean, if a relationship is based around a particular activity. And I mean, and there's nothing wrong with that. I mean, I have friends now that are based around a particular activity, and if I quit that activity for whatever reason,
right,
then these people are probably not going to continue to be my, you know, friend, quote unquote.
Right.
And
we're
you're
not
going to
spend as much time with them because you're not going to be doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. So
right.
Those sorts of things do occur. It's not
you
that
don't
there's
have
a right
to just
or a wrong.
It. You don't have to quit doing anything. You modify you.
But, you know, anytime you make any kind of large change in your life, it's going to affect you, who you are, your personality. And it's unrealistic to think you're going to lose, say, 165 pounds and it's not going to affect you. Or you're going to stop, you know, going to the bar every night because you stopped drinking. It's going to affect you and who you are. Or you're going to stop taking drugs. And you see this all the time with drug addicts, let's say.
Yes.
They can't go back to their old neighborhood.
Right.
They have to make a drastic change about where they live, who they hang out with, because otherwise they'll just go right back to it.
Right.
So, and there's an element of that to just about making any kind of change in your life. You have to change the people that you associate with in order to affect the change sometimes.
Right. And that's what I'm saying is you're choosing to leave them. They may not have chosen to leave you.
Well, yeah, I'm not saying that they chose it. I mean, sometimes things just happen.
Right, right. But I just, you can't blame,
people
who don't want to follow you if you don't want to follow them either.
Oh, yeah. No.
That's all I was, that's where I was coming from. So I was getting the feeling like it's, let's say it would be my fault because I don't want to go to Weight Watchers with you. No, it's not my fault that I don't want to go to Weight Watchers. It's, I don't want to go to Weight Watchers. You want to go. You're going to go. You're going to meet other people. And that's fine. It's a mutual agreement, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, this is a situation I look at all the time with my clients. For example, I have a client. She has two daughters. They're fairly young, like 8 and 11. And, you know, she has an ex-husband, but he still comes over several times a week to see his daughters. And she basically makes dinner for him frequently.
Mm-hmm.
Or they go out frequently on his dime, so he's determining where they go, which is very difficult for her because she's trying to eat in a specific way. But when she relinquishes control and says, okay, we'll go to Burger King or okay, we'll go to Wendy's, almost impossible for her to eat the right foods that she knows that's what she wants to do. So how do you balance that? And then she's got to, you know, I'm very lucky in that Persephone will eat almost anything. So if I put brown rice and fish in front of her, she'll eat it.
Absolutely. She has the most wonderful palate.
Yep. But there are kids out there who you put brown rice and fish in front of them, and they're going to look at you like, I want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You better make it for me now. And that's part of her, that's been part of her issue. Her kids don't want to eat what she is eating. And you know, part of that is I was lucky, A, that Perry was adventurous, and B, that I started with her fairly young, and she really didn't have a choice. Eat your damn fish.
Well, that also gets into the topic of who's the parent.
Yeah.
You know, well, I'm not talking about kids. If your friend wants to have this family dinner for the benefit of her family, then, and she knows this is going to happen, then you and I both know because we've discussed my eating habits, and you make, you know, 80%, you know what I'm saying? You
right.
do the best you can for that one day every 2 weeks.
Right.
You know, she's not, you're not talking about where he's coming over there 4 or 5 nights a week and she's doing this.
Three
so
nights a week. Yeah.
You can either make a choice to eat before and say you ate before and go and be part of the company, or you don't.
Yeah.
But you have to make that choice that you're going to make that personal change. And, you know, you have to compromise at times as well in that nobody's forcing you to eat the burger.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
You can sit there and have the diet soda. I know you hate diet soda or the unsweetened iced tea or the water or whatever and be part of the group.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? If you can't do that because it's too much of a distraction for you. Like, I know there are plenty of alcoholics that cannot go into a bar. They just can't.
Well, yeah, that's very true.
And
or they can't.
I mean, that's it's very different than not eating a French fry. But
right. Well, you know,
I mean,
the thing I always say about
Wait. Yeah, food addicts. There you go. Because there's a strong correlation between food addicts, drug addicts, alcohol addicts, gambling addicts, sex addicts, all of this, all these kind of addictive issues all relate to that addictive personality. And so changing venue completely, you know, there may be food addicts that cannot. I mean, they go into Burger King, they're going to get a damn fry. They're going to get an order of fries. They cannot stop it.
Okay,
it's like
so
some alcoholics, you know, cannot go into a bar.
Do you know what the difference is, though, Terry? People don't need to drink or take drugs in order to survive. They do not need
right.
to smoke cigarettes in order to survive. All of those addictions are voluntary, and they are not, you know, it's not something you have to make a choice about every day. Food addicts, unfortunately, you have to eat to live. So you have to learn how to make the best possible choice in each situation. Now, for example, you know, let's say my client Sally decides she's going to go to Wendy's with her kids and her ex-husband because she wants to go. And while she's there, although she ate prior to going there, she starts to pick. She starts to pick at their fries. She starts to pick at, you know, their chicken nuggets or whatever it is. And before she knows it, she's not feeling well and remorseful. And then because she doesn't feel good and she's remorseful, she eats more crap when she's at home. And that's the pattern that
right.
we fall into. Oh, I already screwed today up, so I'm just going to eat what I want for the rest of the day.
But that's an underlying issue. That's where the work gets done.
Exactly. And those
stopping
are the
that behavior
that
as opposed
to...
what are you going to do if you're at work and you're having a work meeting and they're going to have it catered and they're going to have such and such food, okay? And
well,
you have to be at the work meeting.
We had a situation this past year where there was a work party that centered around an activity that somebody in my office could not attend. So he chose not to attend, and everybody was like, "Oh, why aren't you coming to this party?" Well, it's because I can't participate in the activity.
Right.
That's a social.
What I'm saying is, okay, you've got to have your year-end meeting.
Mm-hmm.
They're catering it with Joe's Pizza,
mm-hmm.
and pizza is not in your wheelhouse for what you're supposed to be doing.
Right.
Are you supposed to quit your job, or are you supposed to make everybody at work eat brown rice and broccoli?
No, what you do is you pack your lunch and bring
your
own food.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. So what I'm saying is some of the responsibility has to be on the person who makes the changes to turn around and say, sure, I'll do this, but this is the way it's going to be for me. And
I've got a question at this point. Because you keep saying the same thing, and it makes me feel like perhaps you heard someone saying that they were not responsible. And I think that I know for myself, I've stated very clearly that the person making the change is just as responsible as anybody else's reaction. And that was a very small part of what we were talking about tonight.
Absolutely. No, I did not. No. What I'm saying is when we go back to the topic of fear and you say people don't make changes because they fear this or they fear that. On the topic of the fear of losing friends.
I was personally talking more about why we do the things, not why we don't change. That was a very small portion of this. Fear is why we do the things, the negative behaviors. My only problem with tonight's conversation is that the diminishing of other addictions, and that's a conversation that I'll have offline later. But you know, any addiction is probably 90% fear-based.
There's the physical
addiction, but there's all of the emotional stuff, whether it's a drug addict, even once they get over the withdrawal and the physical effects, the emotional issues that led them to that drug of choice are still there and have to be dealt with. A gambling addict, just because they don't go to the casino doesn't mean that they don't have issues to deal with. You know, and a food addict, I mean, yes, you have to eat, but you still have to make good choices. And it's all still fear-based. 90% of it is fear-based. There's something that we're afraid it's going to impact our self-esteem. It's going to impact our sex life. It's going to impact our pocketbook. There's some fear that drives us to these bad behaviors. When we can identify those fears that drive us to these bad behaviors, then we can help the person make positive change. That's what this healing, it's not a standalone modality. It's certainly something that goes along with, in the case where, you know, what Robin and I do is certainly it supplements, you know, other means of making that change, whether it's, changes in diet, and then you deal with the emotional reasons that you eat, changes in, other behaviors. You got to deal with the emotional reasons why you do that, why you know it's bad for you, and you do it anyway. You know it's bad. I mean, nobody that gets to the point where they're talking to us doesn't already know that they're doing bad. You know, I mean, that's really what it comes down to, is when the person makes that decision to change, they know they're doing bad. They know there's a good reason they got to change.
And sometimes the realization of that is just enough to drive you back to your bad habit.
Exactly. Until we deal with the emotional reasons and the fears behind it.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about tonight, is dealing with those fears that drive us to those behaviors. What is it that we're seeking comfort? Because every addiction is seeking some form of escape and some form of comfort in our addiction.
You know, when I was talking to my mother, my mother had gastric bypass surgery after I did. And she got to a point where she had lost about 80 pounds. And she called me up one day and she said, I feel so exposed and unprotected as I'm losing the weight, and I can't do this. I can't be this unbuffered from the world around me. And it took me like an awful lot of patience, really, to understand where she was coming from. Because I had felt so much the opposite. I had felt like I was shedding a lot of the weight that I had been carrying around that I didn't want to carry around, whereas she was using it and seeing it as her shield, her protection from the world. And she plateaued. She never got much past that in her journey to weight loss. I mean, she's certainly better now than she was, but she couldn't go past a certain threshold. And there are people, you know, that I have found now that's a very common sensation, a very common feeling. And it's the same thing with drug addicts. They talk about without that high, without that feeling of, you know, that the drugs give them, they feel exposed to people. And they don't have their superpower, if you will, to protect them.
Mm-hmm.
And
right, and they're going to have to feel things that they never felt.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Things that feeling things that they hid behind their behavior, so as not to feel it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel alone. I'm going to have a tub of ice cream. I feel frustrated or jealous. I'm going to have a beer. I feel, you know, this or that, I'm going to shoot up or take a pill or whatever. All of those are suppressing feelings. I don't like the way I look, so I'm going to go out and be promiscuous and make myself feel better. I don't like something about me, so I'm going to do this behavior to make myself feel better. That's what all of it comes down to, and it's usually something we don't like about ourselves, and that almost always goes back to fear.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we deal with. When we can help a person to deal with those fears, then we can help that person to release.
One of the one of the fears that I have always dealt with, and Lee and I, you and I were talking a little bit about this the other day, is not being good enough for the person that's in my life, you know, my significant other, not being good enough, not being everything that they need me to be, and not being able to make them happy. I will jump through hoops. You know, you've known me long enough. I will jump through hoops to try to make that person happy. And in the past, I've kind of gotten a little better, but in the past, I mean, I would do things to my own detriment to make other people happy, and which is not particularly healthy. But it took me a long time to put that down and to feel like I could get past it. Yeah, I know that you know, we were talking the other day about my crazy neurosis.
Well, you know, now that you say that, I think, you know what, there's this thing that moms and friends have, and I have it. It's never being able to say no to someone.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I'm not talking about in a addictive way, as in drugs, alcohol, food, not that. The friend who always calls, can you watch the kids for just an hour, and it turns out to be four. And you know it's going to turn out to be four, but you just can't say no.
Sure.
And I will agree that, you know what, the reason that a lot of times I don't say no is because I'm afraid they'll be mad at me.
Mm-hmm.
And I have taken, and you know this because we've had this conversation, I have taken active steps to decide that I don't care if they get mad at me because I'm not going to be used.
Mm-hmm.
And I have said no.
Right.
So,
right.
So when I said in the beginning of the show that I don't understand, now when you put it into that perspective, mm-hmm. that fear of saying no,
mm-hmm.
so I continue to put myself out and make myself crazy and,
mm-hmm.
and get myself exhausted and
mm-hmm.
put myself in pain, up until probably 6 months ago, I was that person who, no matter who called me, I always said okay.
Yep. And I can vouch for that.
And right. And then it just became physically impossible for me to do so.
Right. Right.
So I had to face the fact that if they were going to be mad at me, they were going to be mad at me. And guess what? Nobody was mad at me.
Right. Right. Exactly. But it's all self-created. And it's all self-created from a base of fear of, oh my gosh, if I'm not good enough, or if I don't do what they ask me to do, then, you know.
They only like me because I help them, and if I don't help them, they won't like me.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, well, you've been on another whole topic for a show. and this is something that I've counseled people through, and I've been through myself as well, is those relationships. That the relationship itself is not healthy for us. And, you know, sometimes
true.
You say no and they're good.
All of that, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's another whole show. And I would be willing to come back on in a month or two and join in that conversation as well, because that's one of the things that I help people with as well, and I have personal experience with.
It's hard, too, when you really, really like the person. You know, as adults, you know what I mean? As an adult to an adult, you really like the person. Then when you add in this favor mix, it just messes everything up. But you really like the person. You really don't want to lose the person because you have a great time with them.
Mm-hmm.
But if your relationship is based on the fact that you do them favors...
Mm-hmm.
It's so hard to balance the I like the person, but I can't deal with everything that goes with liking the person.
Right. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. That really makes it difficult. That's another whole show.
Well,
and
you know what? I have an
topic.
Idea, Terry. Since you're here, and this way you don't have to type it, you can do all my business for me tonight.
I think that's an excellent idea.
Yeah, this way he doesn't have to type it all up while we eat up more time.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Well, actually, I don't type it. I've got it in a Word file, and I just copy and paste it. So.
Cheater.
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 Now, that's another person that's calling me a cheater, and I think of it as, first of all, there's no rule. Second of all, if there are any rules, I'm a station owner. I make them. And
that's more bad. And that very much is the truth, boss. Very much the truth.
So if I'm
then
not,
I shall rephrase
if I don't
that.
Have any rules to break, then I'm not breaking the rules. Therefore, I'm not cheating. I'm being efficient.
Okay, I take it back. You're not a cheater, so I will say very nicely. Can you read the business tonight for me?
Please.
Oh, we're going through already. I'd already agreed to do it. I'm just saying, you know.
Oh, Lee, I love you.
See, this is what I love. This is what I really love, though, is that we can totally not necessarily agree on every point, but when it's all said and done, we're still laughing.
Absolutely.
Well, and that's...
Well, we're not obligated to agree.
You know, I
yeah,
love
I mean,
you. We don't always agree on everything either, but I still love you.
Well, that's true, because we always laugh. You got to bring in the laugh.
Absolutely.
I've been married for 27 years because I don't go to bed mad.
Exactly.
And if it means I have to call him a passive-aggressive whiny poop head and make him laugh, at least he's laughing.
Absolutely.
What part is he laughing at, the passive-aggressive or the poop head?
Passive-aggressive, because he doesn't even think he knows what that is. As far as he's concerned... There's no such thing as passive-aggressive. It's saying what you're feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And he honestly doesn't want to do that if I don't do this.
Mm-hmm.
So for him, it's not passive-aggressive. He's just being honest.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because he's vicious. Robin was the first one to ever say, that Ron man, he has that pointy tongue. And it just goes, ah!
Yeah.
Sharp, razor-sharp tongue he has when he wants to.
You know what's really great, and I have over the years learned to do this, when we're in a room full of a lot of people, like at a wedding shower or something like that, I will go and stand next to Ron because these little quips will come out of his mouth very quietly that are the funniest frickin' things.
And
I'll be standing next
to
him.
He is so
laughing.
Observant.
Yes.
And he is... He says things that people are thinking,
right,
and they won't say.
Exactly.
But he won't say them out loud. He'll only say them to that like-minded person.
Yeah, yeah. If you go stand next to him, he'll kind of under his breath turn towards you and go, can you believe the blah, 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 blah? And you're just, like, dying.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about him.
If you don't have something nice to say, come stand next to me.
That's him. That is, oh, my God, that is so. And the worst thing is that you'll be standing there and everything will be quiet, and all of a sudden you'll hear Robin go,
right?
And I'm like, oh, she's over by Ron. This will be a good one.
All right. Well, I will tell you what. Tonight was good radio. You know, anytime there's a little bit of conflict and disagreement, it's better radio than when we're all sitting around agreeing.
Yeah.
So I always enjoy, good, good discussion. I enjoy good debate. We debated on the issues. You know, we didn't degenerate into name calling. We talked about the issues.
Yeah. Call your name, I'm going to come over there and slap you in the back of the head anyway.
Yeah, I mean, it didn't degenerate.
Really, I didn't call you a poop head once.
That's right. Hey, I'm not a poop head tonight. This is good. That's a good debate. That's a good discussion on the issues. So I think this was a really good night. I don't know that anybody changed their opinions, but the people listening sure have a lot more to think about. And,
well, I found out that I did have
hair,
but I got over it. That was good.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So,
and you didn't charge me $120 6 weeks.
That's right. This is free counseling tonight. Yeah,
uh-huh.
There you go.
Part of our service here on the radio.
All right, let him do the business.
All right, so if you want to get in touch with any of us, if you want to call, if you want to email... CERN.org@gmail.com and tell us exactly what you think about what any of us said tonight. Feel free. If you want to get in touch with any panelists, hosts, guests, anything like that, again, CERN.org@gmail.com. You can look in on the Spiritual Unity Radio Network Facebook page, and you can get in touch with Robin, and, you know, it's a shared account, so you can get in touch with me as well. You can find us, littlestonebridge@gmail.com. Look in on the Little Stone Bridge Pathworkings Facebook page. And the show page for this very show on Friday night, well, actually, this is our last Friday night. This is your last Friday night, isn't it?
That's right. We're going to, next week there will be no show on Friday night. It'll be the following Monday. So
oh,
we have
good.
All
we are
Friday
switching.
Night.
Excellent.
Yes. Yeah, we're going to switch to the Monday.
The spiritual wellness and physical health is moving. Packing up all of its stuff and moving to Monday night.
That's why it's taken us a week and 2 days.
That's right. We get a lot of stuff to pack.
We have stuff.
We always have stuff.
We got all that baggage we were talking about.
That's right. I got a ton of baggage to move.
Let's see. For myself, if you want to get in touch with me, you can find me. I am Terry Power on Facebook. It shows me in North Copley, Pennsylvania. You can follow up, so you can look at my public figure page, Rev Terry Power HP, or follow me on Twitter, @RevTerryPowerHP. And Robin can be found. She is Robin A. McKean. I think she's unique. So you find Robin A. McKean, and that's the only one. And I've already mentioned the Spiritual Wellness Physical Health Facebook page. Go check that out. And did I miss anything?
No, I don't think so. The one thing I do want to say is I know that you didn't get a chance to use them, and this is on a personal note. You didn't get a chance to use them before today, but maybe you ought to tell Lee how much you love your Temptation salt and pepper grinder.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, they're rocking.
Did she tell you about the other bread basket, too?
I don't think I did.
The other
bread
basket?
So now you'll have a fruit bowl and a bread basket.
You know how she got
it? Oh, yes. Yes, so sitting around watching TV and getting picked on until you ordered it,
yes,
or something like that?
Yeah, that's right.
I can't help myself. I have an addiction.
It's a temptations addiction.
Oh, wait, you have no idea.
Only when the China cabinet's full will I counsel you about breaking this addiction.
All right, you got to start. I'm ready to box up a few things.
No, I was going to say, only after the China cabinet's full. Until then, you're on your own.
All right. Yesterday we're watching, right, and they had this Lock and Lock stuff that I wanted. And my son was watching because he was bored babysitting for his daughter, and he goes, oh, that stuff's pretty cool. I'm like, what color do you want? I'm on the website right now. So he's got green ones coming to his house. So
oh, no.
I'm so sad.
I'm hoping he's sticking in green.
Yeah, well, his wife loves green, so he's like, he wanted the blue ones because their house is very beachy, and he said, but I know she likes green, so you better order the green ones. I was like, okay.
Aww.
There you go.
I got to keep my daughter-in-law happy, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, what a good husband he's grown up to be.
You know, it's a scary thing, but it's true.
Yeah, good. Took him a little while, but good for him, good on him.
Well, you know, it's the village. It's that village that you and I created that raised my son, so.
Well, yeah, of all your kids, I feel the most responsible for Adam.
Yeah, well, you know, he was the most wayward.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Being the oldest and having to find a way, it's me finding my way at the same time. It was much harder for him because, you know, when he was born, I was on that Stuart White picket fence road, and I jumped off the road and ran down the cul-de-sac, and I could have easily left him very far behind.
Yeah.
But, you know, my finding my path and having all of you there to help out, it really helped him find his path. I mean, I can physically point to many of the people in our community and who he is now and how he got to where he is because of the influence. Like, if he had never met you, he would not necessarily really have been as close to Jimmy, because Jimmy's previous relationship before you was not a happy one, so it was not a place for Adam to be.
Right.
And at his age at the time. So knowing you brought him to Jimmy, which brought him to the diner, which started him on his culinary career, you know, him watching, even Mark, watching the work ethic that went into planning our festivals, watching people like Anthony and Kevin, their relationship made him open-minded. Dave and Crow, knowing them, learning how to drum because of Jackie and Rich Sheridan.
Mm-hmm.
These are all, I mean, my children bring up these as putting them into the things that they love in their life because of these people and their open-mindedness. And, I mean, I can physically point to these people and say, you are the reason that he is this positive in this respect. I'm so lucky. So many people do not have that.
Yeah, that's true. And it's one of the things, and I've said this before on the air, it's one of the things about me now having Persephone, that I would love for her to have that kind of community. And, I mean, she has it with you and with Sammy and Roseanne and Grammy Owl across the way here. But even an even larger community the way we had it when we were doing the events.
Well, yes, that's true. But you know what? It seems that the important people from that time, the people that really mattered to us.
Yeah, that's true.
Jess, the Matt, the Owl, Wendy and Rich, you and me, Anthony and Kev, those people can still be in her life. And I think what she's going to get is the cream of the crop without having to sift through.
True, yeah.
Where we had to decide, you know, who.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know what I mean? We had to decide who to let them really take a role from and who not. Has the cream has risen to the top.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people that she sees. Those are the people that she sees continually coming back. I think that's a big thing too. I mean, I'm not going to belittle the fact that having my family in her life is a good thing, because we love her more than, you know, we love her like one of our own. So, you know, she's lucky. She may not have her aunts and uncles right with her from your side of the family, but she does have aunts and uncles by choice.
Oh, yeah. She talks all the time about how Sammy is so close to her and that you're like her aunt. And you know,
her soul sister?
Yeah,
did she lose her bracelet yet?
No, she has not taken it off. She's still
wearing it. Aw, I'm going to tell Sammy she's going to be really happy.
Yep, every day she checks it and tightens it and makes sure that it's on. And she has shown it to everybody ad nauseum. So, yeah.
Aw. Well, I know Sammy's happy that she's happy, because the one thing with my poor daughter is all she wants to know is that people appreciate her, and sometimes it just doesn't always happen.
Oh, gosh, I love Sammy. I actually was just finally undoing my bag from when we visited you, because I'm, like, you know,
busy?
Well, busy.
Busy?
Lazy. I'm going to smack you.
Busy?
Busy. And I found the card, and I was rereading the cards that you guys gave me, and she signed her card Samala, because I've always called her that, and I was like, oh, that's so cute. She knows, she remembers that I call her that. So yeah, no, she's just an awesome kid. I was just
my kids absolutely love their nicknames. It's like when Mikey used to call her Sam Wah, you know, and even Robin the Realtor up the street, you know, my kids know which Robin it is by what they call her.
Yeah, sure.
You know, and it's wonderful. It's wonderful that we have such really wonderful people in our lives.
Yeah, well.
And now we have Terry, too, even with his pontificating.
Pontificating.
He's brooding about that.
Oh, don't brood. Come on.
I'm not brooding. That would just be a conversation later.
Apparently, I'm going to be pontificated at later.
That could be a good thing. Oil painting? Anyone?
Yes, oil painting, maybe, yes. Yes, definitely.
Here comes that wicked laugh in the background.
Mwah.
Oh my gosh, we're really late. Look, Terry doesn't get mad when he's on the show and we're late.
Oh no, he's been sending me text messages. We still have to pack.
I know, you have to go. Please give Rachel a big hug for me.
I will.
And hopefully one of these days we will get to have a face-to-face and have a really good time, and I hope you both get healed.
Yes, well, thank you.
Absolutely.
I'm going to go and help. Hope that somebody can heal my shoulder because my shoulders are wrecked.
I'm looking forward to a massage, and then we'll swap stories about fear. Yeah, that's it. Going to the left. Yeah. Okay.
All right. Well, I'm going to say night. That way, we can start the night process.
Okay.
And you guys have a great time, and text me and let me know how you're doing. Make sure you let me know you get home safe.
I will, yes, ma'am.
And we'll talk about the show a week from Monday when you guys get back.
Okay, fair enough.
All right. Night, Terry.
All right.
Night, night, darling.
All right, and to everybody out there, as always, thank you for coming and listening to our silly show. Appreciate it week in and week out. And I just want to also say thank you to Niv, who ran the board for us last night in a pinch. So I really appreciate her help. She's there every time I need her. Thanks, Niv. And I'm sorry that Terry didn't see you in the queue. Anyway, I'll have to talk about having a conversation after the show. But anyway, we, as always, wish everybody a good week and spread the love. And we'll talk to you next week, a week from this Monday. So, good night.
All right. Good night.
Good night.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to the Spiritual Unity Radio Network. Join us 7 nights a week for exciting programming covering a variety of expressions of faith. And remember, all manifestations of the divine are equally valid.